Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And good morning and welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend wherever you happen to be. Of course, we've been living on airplanes. If you listen to my voice, you know I've been listening and living on airplanes. You can always call me at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. All right, you want to know where we are? Okay, first of all, we've been crisscrossing the country for weeks. I'll give you a hint. Get out your maps. 36 degrees, 38 minutes north, 93 degrees, 13 minutes west. We are coming to you from the heart of the Ozarks. We are in Missouri. In fact, we're at Silver Dollar City. If you don't know where that is, we're about 8 miles west of Branson, Missouri. And by the way, getting here, interesting story, flying into Springfield, brand new airport. That's the good news. Bad news, of course, my producer's luggage went to Honolulu. She didn't listen to me. There are only two kinds of airline bags: carry on and lost. And listen, I'm going to give you a couple of rules here you need to follow when it comes to bags. You heard the first one, right? Only carry on. Otherwise, it's lost. Number two, if you can't afford to lose it, don't pack it. If you you want to pack anything valuable in your checked-in luggage, kiss it goodbye, because luggage locks are ornamental. Not only that, the TSA won't let you lock your bags. And if you have medicines, prescription drugs, jewelry, a second pair of eyeglasses, that better be in your carry-on bag or you will be blind. And do what I do. I haven't checked a bag in over 8.5 years. I FedEx my bags. I'll be doing that later today while Jordan waits for her bags to return from Honolulu. She was flying from Los Angeles to Springfield, Missouri, and her bag went to Honolulu. Love it. Her bag will be chasing her for the rest of the week. So anyway, that's my my rule of thumb on that one. Let's go right to some emails here. We got one from Barb. How common is this practice? I found a reduced flight online and proceeded to purchase the flight as I had done in the past. I had all the required info plus the credit card data entered. I clicked to finish my purchase, but I received a message stating the flight is now $100 more than it was just a minute ago. Seems like a bait and switch to me. Well, normally I would say you may have something there, Barb, but keep in mind that the airlines update their fares, and I'm not making this up, 250,000 times a day. And as those computer projection models change, and they change by the second, the price changes as well. It's basically law, supply, and demand. That price could have also gone down $100 15 seconds later. Here's what I would do. Why does everybody still want to purchase everything online? Research online, then pick up the phone. I know it's a new concept for you, and talk to a human being. Call the airline and negotiate the best fare you can get with them. Remember, once you book a fare with the airline, you still have 24 hours in which to purchase it. And it's in that 24-hour period, once you've confirmed and booked that first flight at a fare you think was reasonable, that you can then surf the web and see if you can beat it. If you do it the other way around, it's very easy to get trapped, as you just did. Bottom line is, these things change by the hour, by the minute, and sometimes by the second. From Sarah, another email from Sarah. I purchased with Delta Travel Points. Basically, she went on mileage. Two tickets to Dublin Island, Ireland. Well, first of all, the idea that you're actually able to redeem your miles with Delta, if we had a drum roll here, we'd give it to you. We'd give you a standing ovation, because Delta has one of the worst records of redeeming miles of any major airline in this country. The Wall Street Journal just did a wonderful piece called The Road to Redemption, and Delta came in like almost dead last. You know who came in first? Southwest. But let's go back to your email, Sarah. I digress. You got two tickets to Dublin, Ireland, and she said, when I checked my ticket online, and the tickets were showing no seat assignments. So guess what she did? Wow, she called a human being. And she said, I called Delta to get my seat assignment for my flight over, but they wouldn't give me one for my flight back, and they weren't the seats I originally chose. She writes, they will not give me a seat assignment, saying I will get these upon check-in upon departure. Well, a lot of things happen when you redeem miles. First of all, you're at the bottom of the list. If there's a caste system, you are last. And they're going to give out the premium seats to the paying customers. You're still going to get a seat. You have a bona fide reservation. But the bottom line is, don't think you're always going to get the desired seat that you want because you got your seat on miles. So, and she goes, I think showing up and getting assigned a seat is not what my husband and I want. Well, it's not what I want either. It's the name of the game. So, two words here. One, supervisor. Have you talked to a supervisor? That's the way to start. Second thing is, if I were you, I would get out to the airport 2 or 3 hours early because of another problem. And that is, this is the summer of huge overbooking. Why? The airlines have parked over 800 planes in the deserts of New Mexico, Arizona, and California. That's roughly the equivalent of taking a complete U.S. airline totally out of business. What does that mean? Well, fewer planes, of course, fewer flights, and fewer seats. That happens to intersect with an increase in demand for travel. And you know what that means? Overbooking. And that means bumping. Huge amounts of overbooking this summer. In fact, airlines traditionally had a model on some flights, maybe not the Dublin flight that you're on, but on many flights, of doing overbooking between 20 and 30%, because on heavily traveled business routes, they found that the frequent flyers, the business travelers, would hold multiple bookings to protect themselves, and would therefore there'd be a large no-show factor. So that's why everybody's getting bumped. And which airline, by the way, here's one that nobody ever gets. Which airline has the worst record for bumping passengers? Meaning, which airline bumps more passengers than any other airline? Give up. It's Southwest. And which airline has the best record for bumping the fewest passengers? In fact, they have a policy, and this is why. They have a policy of not overbooking. So if they don't overbook, they can't bump. That airline, JetBlue. So Delta, on the other hand, they're going to overbook with the best of them, or as they like to say, with the worst of them. So now you know, when you book a ticket using miles, your status sometimes goes into the toilet. Unless, of course, you book 2 first-class tickets, and therefore you'll get a seat because that cabin may be empty based on what the prices are this summer. Let me warn you, airfares to Dublin this summer over last year up 32%, to Rome up 37%, and to London, fasten your seatbelts, up 42%. Pretty wild. Once again, we're coming from Silver Dollar City. By the way, they're celebrating, for people who have a sense of history, their 50th anniversary. Most of you listening to the show don't even know they exist. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that, of course, and then how to dress for success when you travel. You might be surprised about our next guest. She wrote a story called Naked with a Passport. That ought to get you to come back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from Silver Dollar City right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
GoRVing.com. With RVs starting at just $5,000, taking memorable vacations has never been more affordable. To find out how you can hit the road to adventure, visit GoRVing.com. Go affordably. Go RVing.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here coming to you from Silver Dollar City in Missouri. We're about 8 miles west of Branson. We'll be talking about that a little bit later in the show. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If my voice sounds terrible, it's because it is. I've been living on airplanes. But then again, you knew that already. And of course, if you can't get through on the phones, you can always email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, question, phone number, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And one important note, there's another reason why you should go to our website. We have a comprehensive list there of all the great aid and relief organizations working so hard to help the people in Haiti, in Chile, in Western China, and of course down in the Gulf. This is not just the Red Cross. We recommend them, of course. This is not just texting on your phone to donate $10. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of really cool, hardworking organizations that you can get involved with. That's right, physically involved with, and actually go there and bring something to the party. You've got expertise, intelligence, experience that you can bring to help a lot of people right now. So check out that website, petergreenberg.com, just to get the list. And do what I always do, hit the print button, because you want to look at it. And it may give you some ideas that you never thought about. And, you know, we talk about volunteer vacations. It's the best gift, in the end, you give yourself. I said right before the break, my next guest wrote a story. I love this title, Naked with a Passport, because, unfortunately, Americans are still the most geographically ignorant people on the face of the planet. We are the most culturally insensitive. We don't know how to immerse ourselves in the culture. Our idea of an adventure trip is to go to an American-branded hotel in Rome and order a cheeseburger and wear the ugliest pair of golf plaid pants that somebody gave us and a baseball hat and wonder why people laugh at us. Well, our next guest may know something about that. She's the journalist and contributor to About.com and Business Week and a few other places, and she's the author of Naked with a Passport, Allison Steinwellner. Hey, Allison.
Hi.
So, are you dressed right now?
I am in my pajamas, actually.
Oh, okay.
You know, every writer wears that uniform when they're home.
You know what? You know what? That's the best thing about being a writer. You can do it in your bathrobe. I know it. I've done it many times.
Exactly.
All right. But if you were going to take a trip, Allison...
Yes, then I leave the pajamas and the suitcase, and then depending on where I'm going, my preferred outfit might be nothing. And, you know, I'm not the type of person who, A, is a nudist, B, walks around naked in regular life. I'm talking about going to spas. And what I found through my travels throughout the world was that when you go to a spa, even in countries that can be quite conservative, the standard of dress is, let's say, de minimis. And it's something that really I began to notice a great deal after I went to take the waters, as they say, in Baden-Baden, Germany, where it's a completely nude situation, and it's also, it happens to be co-ed.
Wow. Okay, where can I go? Can I sign up today?
So in Baden-Baden, there is a whole bathing complex that's there, and there's one that's more modern, and you can wear a bathing suit to it. And it's, you know, the water coming up from the hot springs, that's supposed to be quite therapeutic. And then the exact same water is in a much older facility called the Friedrichsbad, which is old enough that Mark Twain once bathed there. And it's an traditional style Irish Roman bath, and you go from from room to room to room, and there's various temperatures of heat and steam and bathing, and that's the one where it is indeed nudist. And
Allison,
days of the week it's co-ed.
All right, but here's my question: as you wrote in your own story, you're not exactly featured in any of the videotapes called "Girls Gone Wild" in college. So, was this really a brave new world for you when you got there?
You know, it gave me pause when I heard that it was co-ed. I was sort of in it already. I was already in the locker room when I realized that it was going to be a co-ed situation. And, you know, I'm a married lady and been married for some time and want to stay that way. And I thought, huh, this is going to be a little bit weird. But, you know, I'm the type of traveler that when I'm not going to wear those plaid pants, as you said, or order the cheeseburger in Rome, you know, I want to do like the locals do. And so I thought, all right, you know, I'm going to just give myself a little pep talk here. And if anything seems slightly bizarre, I'm just going to get out, but I'm going to give it a try.
And what happened?
And so, you know, it went pretty well for a while. And, you know, as I got into the relaxation of the steam and the heat, you know, I looked around a little bit and noticed that basically nobody was looking at anybody else. This is all a very nonchalant type of a situation. And it would have all gone just fine if I had the ability to read a map that you go from station to station in a certain order. And I guess I made the wrong turn, and I ended up in an area that was not co-ed, and in fact was male only, and I was, you know, wearing nothing.
Allison, I have to ask the question: were you given a sort of standing ovation?
I was yelled at. I was yelled at in German, which I don't understand.
I love it. You were yelled at in German for being naked in an all-male facility. How stupid are those guys? All right, but let's talk about this, because the concept of nudity when you travel is interesting to me, because the bottom line is, and this has been my experience, and Allison, tell me if this is yours as well, the reason why nobody was looking at each other in that spa is because when everybody takes their clothes off, it's usually not very pretty.
Well, I think that's true, and I also just think it was normal. I mean, look, if you went to a black tie affair and you were wearing blue jeans, you'd probably feel sort of naked. But if you go to a black tie affair and you're wearing a tuxedo, you would feel appropriately dressed. And in that type of a scenario, and in that spa where that the correct apparel is to be wearing nothing, it's actually not weird to be wearing nothing.
Right, but
you know,
we're not,
quite different than walking down the street naked.
Right. I mean, we're not really talking about this as anything sort of sex tourism, nothing like that at all.
No, not at all. It's absolutely a spa situation. And I think that's where we get confused, as you know, in our culture, you're never naked in the presence of people of the opposite sex unless you're like in the hospital being born, or unless it's something that's a little sexual, and that's not what was happening there.
So what lessons did you take from this?
Well, you know, I learned, you know, I always thought I was kind of brave to be willing to do these various spa treatments naked, since I wasn't a person who was willing to walk around naked in my regular life. I thought it was kind of like a traveler's badge of honor. And I learned that basically I had nothing to be so proud about, because, you know, I really was essentially sticking to etiquette. I was dressed appropriately for the occasion when I was wearing nothing. And it was only in the moment that I walked into the room where I wasn't supposed to be, not wearing any clothes, that I was completely inappropriately attired in nothing, that I realized that I actually don't like to do things that make me uncomfortable. So I didn't really earn that traveler's badge of honor that day.
So what you're saying to me is, well, there was no point during your stay there that you felt comfortable?
True. I felt comfortable up until the point in which I was screamed at.
Well, come on.
Imagine.
Now, was there... Okay, here's another stupid question. Is there a spa treatment that you should never do naked?
You know, I think that you can't... You can never say never about this. You know, every culture has its own set of spa treatments and health treatments that require greater or lesser degrees of clothing. For example, if you were to go to a Turkish hammam and you tried to wear your clothes, it would just absolutely not work. I mean, if you tried to wear a bathing suit, for example, it would absolutely not happen. So I think that really you do need to take your cues from what everyone else is doing. And, you know, also I do always say this regarding everything from food to spa to what have you, which is, if it really makes you uncomfortable, don't do it. I mean, you know, for God's sakes, this is your vacation probably. I mean, why make yourself terribly uncomfortable?
Did you ever relax at all?
Well, you know, at the beginning, very relaxed. And then, you know, after I sort of stopped shaking and calmed down from being screamed at, there is a little bit after the adrenaline leaves your body, you definitely do relax a little bit more.
And in fact, you're so relaxed that you're talking to me today wearing nothing but pajamas.
Exactly.
I feel so honored. Of course, you know, there'll be those people, because this is radio, who are just imagining us both naked right now. But we won't go there.
That's bottom line of radio.
That's the beauty of radio. Are you kidding me? Anyway, the name of the story, of course, is Naked with a Passport, and you had both, and you made it work. Allison Stein-Wellner, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
We love that. When we come back, we're going to take you to a visit to a place that most of you have never been. I've been to Branson, but I've never been to Silver Dollar City. So when we come back, we're going to tell you about a place that's 50 years old that you knew nothing about, and maybe you should. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from Silver Dollar City. As I keep saying, we're 8 miles west of Branson. A lot of surprises in Branson as well, and throughout the show. Back with more right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. And if you're wondering where we're coming from today, catch this. We're set in a 2,000-acre forest in the Ozarks near a place called Marvel Cave. We're going to talk about that as well. And I gave you the latitude and longitude, but I'll do it again. 36 degrees, 38 minutes north, 93 degrees, 13 minutes west. We are in Silver Dollar City, about 8 miles west of Branson, Missouri. And if you don't know where that is, my next guest knows all about it. He's what we call a local boy. His name, Brad Thomas. He's worked here for over 20 years. I have to tell you, Brad, before I came here, I had no idea what to expect. I knew, of course, about Branson. You go back to the days of when 60 Minutes did their piece, and they call it, you know, the hillbilly music capital of the Midwest, or Las Vegas for hillbillies, I think they call it. And, you know, there's so many stereotypes about what this place is, that they're nothing but blue-haired ladies on buses looking to play slot machines. I mean, it's like, what are you talking about? So what are you talking about, Brad?
We know, first of all, there are no slot machines in Branson, which surprises a lot of people.
But people think that's what I'm saying. That's the perception, that there's a major casino operation there. In fact, when I first came to Branson, what I realized was it looked like, if you will excuse the expression, it was Vegas without the casinos. Because you had all the big stars, many of whom had their own either music or dinner theaters. And we'll be talking about that later in the show. And yet, I remember what Morley Safer said. He said, why Branson? No one knows.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about Branson is tourism didn't just start in the 90s when the music shows started really catching on. Tourism has been a part of these hills for over 100 years.
And 50 of them right here in Silver Dollar
City. Right here at Silver Dollar City.
Now, this is a theme park, right? Most people think of theme parks on the coasts. Or they'll think of it like, Six Flags, or they'll think of it in Sandusky, Ohio, and all the great roller coaster rides. How did this happen here?
You know, what's fun is we are right now sitting on top of Marvel Cave. And if we take a few steps...
You have to tell me about Marvel Cave, because most people don't even know about it.
If we take a few steps over into Marvel Cave, we'll go down several flights of steps. We will end up in the Cathedral Room, which is large enough for the Statue of Liberty to actually stand up in. That cave had its first visitors in the 1890s and has had tourists visiting it all of these years.
Essentially, you built this entire place above Marvel Cave.
The Hershen family came here in 1950, signed a lease on the cave and all of this land.
Well, they said, we want to lease the cave?
They did.
How do you lease it from who?
From the owners. There were two ladies who...
two blue-haired ladies?
They were.
Nah, come on.
They actually were. And they... the Hershen signed this lease for the land and the cave. The Lynch sisters were the ladies' names, and they actually were taking visitors down into the cave.
Not just a mom and pop. They were a sister and sister operation.
They absolutely were. Taking people down several ladders, carrying lanterns into the cave. Hershens came in.
So basically the tort lawyers were loving that one.
You know, it was a different world back
then.
Yeah,
I bet.
The Hershens came in. They actually operated the cave for 10 years. And then as a way to queue for the cave, because the business in the cave had grown enough that there were people actually waiting on tours, so they built Main Street of Silver Dollar City, May 1st, 1960.
So people would have something to do while they're waiting to see the cave.
Precisely.
And then you grew to like 50 acres.
Well, you know, Silver Dollar City then caught on. And a couple of years later, by 1962, the Hershen family realized, you know what, the Silver Dollar City thing is bigger than Marvel Cave. And so then we started adding some rides. And fast forward 50 years, we'll run about 2 million in visitation. We have folks from all over the country that come to visit us. In the summertime, you'll see families with children. In the spring and in the fall, you'll notice a lot of empty nesters couples that are coming to Branson to have fun. But you see this very healthy mix of visitors.
How many people who come to Branson just sort of discover Silver Dollar City?
You know, actually not that many.
It's the other way around?
Silver Dollar City, actually, in order to enjoy this place, you need to invest 7-8 hours, maybe even 2 or 3 days. So folks who come to Silver Dollar...
And you got to bring your own lantern and your own ladder, too.
You don't.
No, I'm
joking.
You don't. Okay.
You don't. Folks who come to Silver Dollar City actually have planned that day or those days to come to Silver Dollar City. So, to come over and spend several hours, most folks have planned that before they leave home.
What's the biggest surprise that people find here?
I think two things. One, the natural beauty of this place. We build roller coasters around trees.
You don't touch a tree?
We don't touch a tree that is 3 inches or more in diameter. And if we have to touch a tree, for whatever reason, we have to plant 3 trees that are 3 inches or more in diameter to replace it. That's why you see the natural beauty here. And the other surprise is our people. Our folks are genuinely friendly. They take a lot of pride in what they do, and that's a pleasant surprise for travelers these days.
Plus, they're locals like you who never escape Missouri.
Well, I think many of them have escaped Missouri. Many of them chose to come here, actually, because of the environment and the people.
Right. But I'm saying, you got your college education here and you stayed.
Sure.
See? And the authorities still haven't found out. That's the problem. All right, Brad Thomas of Silver Dollar City. Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. And coming up next, we got a whole mess of emails to answer. And I got to tell you something, some people have some serious problems out there. We'll actually have some fun with this when we come back from Silver Dollar City in Missouri right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, coming to you from Silver Dollar City in Missouri, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And speaking of that, we got lots of emails to deal with. We got one from Jerry in Florida. And I have to say, we get emails like this one all the time. I wish the travel industry would wake up and listen. She writes, I would like to take a cruise, but I'm a woman who will be traveling alone. Could you recommend a cruise that I would feel comfortable with? My age bracket is over 60. Well, you know what? This is not about age appropriate. This is about financial and attitude appropriate. And the problem is the cruise lines for years have been discriminating against single folks as long as I can remember, with that dreaded single supplement where you can't really travel alone without paying for two people in the room or in the cabin. Well, guess what, Jerry? The industry is starting to wake up, not in a fast way, but in a noticeable way. I'll give you two cruises that I like. P&O Cruises has a ship called the Azura. It's actually going to... coming out with 18 dedicated single cabins per ship. That's a United Kingdom-based cruise line. But there's a new ship that's coming in right now, this year, the Norwegian Epic, and it's just launching. And they finally got it right. They actually have 128 cabins that have been built and designed just for solo travelers, and they're not priced in a draconian way. They're called studio cabins. They're 100 square foot accommodations with a full size bed, and it's a great deal. Now, every once in a while, you will find cruise lines that will do solo sails, and you'll find those in a lot of repositioning cruises where they just have to get the ship to another location, and they know going in they're not going to fill the ship. For example, in some South American cruises between Fort Lauderdale and Argentina, the Crystal Symphony has solo sails, Another one you might want to check out is Silver Sea. They don't have big sails, but they do lower the surcharge to just 10% over the regular rate if you're traveling solo on some selected sailings between September and December. The good news is I think that once the Norwegian Epic starts sailing and people hear about these dedicated single cabins, the other cruise lines are going to have to redesign their model because everybody's going to want one because they know they can now. And by the way, they should. Here's one from Maryland in Florida. My husband and I are recently retired school teachers. We purchased a condo in Naples, Florida, and would like to spend 2 months in Massachusetts and then spend 2 months back in Naples. The question is dealing with car rentals. We don't mind driving back and forth one time, but wish we could fly from Boston and rent a car in Fort Myers for a month or two. Well, here's the good news, and the rental car companies will never tell you this, but they deal this seasonally. You have to look at rental car fleets like, flocks of migrating birds. They have deals. They never advertise them. They're called drive-away deals. And what it is, and this is especially true on the Northeast Corridor, which is where you are, between the East Coast in the north and the Southeast down south, meaning between Florida and New England, that at two or three different times during the year, the rental car companies find themselves with an abundance of unneeded cars in Florida in the summer and an unneeded number of cars in Massachusetts in the winter. And for rates that drop as low as $8 a day, that's it. They'll basically say, could you please do us a favor and drive this car the heck out of town and drive it down south or drive it up north, and because you're doing them the favor of essentially repositioning their fleet. So double check with the rental car companies. Ask them if they have a drive-away deal. It may not be through their 800 number. It may just be through a local franchisee who's sitting there with five other cars in the lot he or she can't deal with and can't use and literally cannot rent. That's the way to do it, Marilyn. And if not, then you get to negotiate the drop-off charge. And depending on the time of the year, again, even if the rental car company doesn't have a drive-away deal, they can negotiate that drop-off charge because you're still doing them the favor of moving the car where they need it, and you just happen to be going in that direction. One from Selma. I heard Mr. Greenberg talk about using the Capital One Venture card because the airlines are making translating frequent flyer miles into an airline ticket more difficult. How about impossible? You better believe it. The Venture card is a great deal, I got to tell you. You know what it is? You earn miles. In fact, they're offering double miles, but here's the best part. No blackout periods, no expiration dates, no cap on the number of miles you can earn, but you still have to redeem them, right? No, you don't. Because the miles translate into a dollar figure that you can then use to purchase whatever you want to buy. An airline ticket, a hotel room, a cruise ship berth. How cool is that? So, you know what? Necessity being the mother of invention, I got to tell you, Selma, that's the card you want. Because at least you know when you use the card, you're going to actually be able to use the miles that you've earned. When we come back, a little bit of history about Branson. Stuff you didn't know. And by the way, stuff I didn't know. Right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Silver Dollar City in Missouri. And if you hear birds behind me, it could either be sparrows, doves, cardinals, or finches. You pick. But they're everywhere. Anyway, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. Excuse my terrible voice. That's 888-88-PETER. Yeah, you hear beautiful birds, and then you hear me. Oh, I hear the birds. There they are. All right. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. I always like to ask the locals about stuff, especially when it comes to history. You know, you go to places like Orlando, and somebody says to you, oh, let's go down to Old Town. And I go, Old Town? How far back does that go? Maybe 35 years? Well, you might be surprised to find out how old Branson is. And joining me now, the unofficial historian of Branson, Martha Bonner. Hey, Martha.
Hi.
So, you know, most people, and we were talking about this earlier in the show, when they think of Branson, they're thinking of that stereotypical image of the blue-haired ladies on the buses going to see Tony Orlando. And there's a lot more history than that.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You know, ever since the early 1900s, people have been coming to Branson.
That far back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It started with, as you can see, the natural beauty. There was a lot of attraction. And Marvel Cave, which you were talking about earlier, was written up in Scientific American magazine in 1893. And commercial tours started in Marvel Cave in 1894. So people were coming here because of this great and wonderful cave and the rugged, beautiful hills.
What about the railroads? Did there, The railroads had to play a major part.
They did. In the early 1900s, when the railroad came into downtown Branson, which of course at that time was a few buildings, it provided an avenue for people to get here. So that
and what was
tourism.
Branson named for?
For Reuben Branson, who was the postmaster.
So he wielded the stamp.
Well, and it was not unusual for towns to be named after the postmaster back then. That's an awful lot of power when you think about it today.
That's right. Well, you know, there was a time when we actually, we based our correct time on railroad timetables.
Makes sense, I guess.
That's when the trains actually
ran on time, yeah.
And I think they ran on time for about a year. All right, so Branson was named after the postmaster. The
yes.
trains really helped the development of the area.
Helped bring people into the area. And that was, you know, the first boom, the first influx of tourism really in the early 1900s had a lot to do with the natural resources of the area. Sort of the second wave came in the 1950s and 60s when the Table Rock Lake went in, when Silver Dollar City developed. All of a sudden, there was 850 miles of shoreline. It was a great outdoor recreation area, and Silver Dollar City played a huge role bringing in 125,000 people, which was huge at that time.
But when you talk about the lake, you're talking about a man-made lake.
Yes, a dam that was built in the late 50s that was completed in 1960. And so that's when that huge shoreline area was developed.
And then, of course, the third wave.
The third wave was in the 90s. Now, really, from the 60s on, you know, in the 60s, some of the local families were playing music, playing the music of the hills, and it was very popular. Music shows developed, and there were about 22 music theaters. In the 1990s, when 60 Minutes did the profile piece, actually Time Magazine and the Wall Street Journal did too, but 60 Minutes really broke the story.
I mean, it really was a phenomenon at that point.
It just
erupted.
It was. Why? I think
now,
it was
Morley
a discovery.
Morley Safer said he had no idea why. Do you have an idea why?
Well, sure, absolutely, because there was a lot of talent here, and there was a lot of vision of the people who were here in the entertainment industry providing what people really wanted to see. You know, another factor was, in the 1960s, late 1960s, the publicist for Silver Dollar City convinced Paul Henning, who was a producer of the Beverly Hillbillies, to come here and film 5 episodes of the Beverly Hillbillies here. The Beverly Hillbillies at that time was the number one rated show in America.
On CBS. Yeah.
So that brought a lot of attention to it, put Branson and Silver Dollar City in the national spotlight.
So Buddy Ebsen had something to do with it.
He did. They filmed right here on Main Street where you're looking. But that was, a little bit of vision and genius. And so there was steady growth, really, that was happening. Branson was a great entertainment town all the way up into the 1990s. It's just that the national spotlight all of a sudden was on it in the 90s.
And then, boom. And everybody had a dinner theater.
They doubled because now we're at 50 theaters who went over 100 shows in town.
Every day. Unbelievable. So how many people a year?
Over 8 million into Branson.
Wow. Unreal. That's amazing.
For a town that has 7,000 residents, yes.
Well, that's like going to Telluride, Colorado, but Telluride, Colorado doesn't have 50 theaters.
Right. We're pretty unique that way, but I think another factor is, and keep in mind that, you know, I didn't grow up here, but I certainly am a convert. Incredible talent. You know, there's really a lot to see and do here.
I warn people because they have to be aware of the audience participation part of the show.
Right. There's that connection. It's a very personable place.
And what brought you here?
My husband actually was just enamored with this area, and so he wanted to move here, and I said, well, I'll give it a try. I didn't know if I could, if I would enjoy living in a basically rural area, but I love it.
I have to ask one question. Have you been to all 50 theaters?
Not yet, but I'm going to.
Okay. Now you're in trouble because you said it. All right, Martha Bonner, the unofficial historian of Branson, thanks for joining us. That music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations sticking around, we got a whole lot more coming from Silver Dollar City, 8 miles west of 50 theaters, otherwise known as Branson, Missouri. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide and my fabulously sounding voice and a few finches, doves, and sparrows right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.